Hello, and welcome to the Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month. This monthly cassette tape series represents yet another step in accomplishing Grandy & Associates' vision of helping the service contractor come to a place of maturity and profitability. Each month, a different national speaker from throughout the service and trades industry will share dozens of cost-reducing, profit-increasing ideas to help you become a more profitable company. This month's tape is presented by Steve Toburin. Steve was the very first presenter for the Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month back in June of 1994. He has also been one of the best received speakers. This month's tape, entitled Preparing Your Business Today to Sell Tomorrow, is a subject that is near and dear to every contractor. We all have visions of selling our company someday for lots of money. The key to doing that is preparing it today so it will be ready to sell tomorrow. Steve has first-hand experience on this subject, having successfully built and sold 5 service companies. It doesn't matter whether you are a year old or a year from retirement. Steve's tape will provide you with valuable insight in terms of how to prepare your business today to sell tomorrow.
One day, sooner or later, you're going to leave your business. Maybe you say, what do you mean, leave my business? It's my life. I'm never going to leave. I love this company. Well, that's great. Good for you. And I'm in total agreement with you that there's nothing neater in your life than starting and molding and nurturing a small business. You have such feelings of accomplishment. You have pride of ownership. You have freedom, and you're making a lot of money. But still, I'm going to tell you today that no matter how wonderful your business is, and no matter how strong your commitment is to your business, one day you're going to leave. What's going to happen? You see, too many people in small business, they don't plan. They spend their entire life consumed by the urgent details of day-to-day business, and then one day, they're carried out the door feet first. In a very final sense, they've left. Now, everybody leaves for a final time. Our only choice is how and when we leave. But, of course, most of us don't die with our boots on. Our choices hopefully come sooner in life. Maybe for you, they'll start right now as you listen to this program. Because no matter how much you love your business, no matter how obsessed you are with getting it just right, one day your business is going to change. Maybe you'll think, I don't want to go to work today. And then you realize you have to go in. And suddenly your business becomes a harsh mistress instead of the lover that you've had for so many years. And you start to feel trapped. And that's no fun. Every day in business, thousands of small service business owners, they burn out. They wind up with feelings of despair, worthlessness, anxiety, and panic. They're scared to answer the phone, and life is no fun. Now, on the other hand, maybe you've found a new love. You want to start a new business, and that's fine. Nobody says you have to go through life serving the same old customers the rest of your life. Or maybe you've made enough money, and you don't see much point in stacking up more and more financial worth. And maybe you want to work as a volunteer, or spend more time with your family, or go back to school, or do more in your religion. Or maybe you're just deep down gut-wrenching tired, and you decide to get out to sell your business. Well, let's meet a hard-working businessman now. We're going to call him Joe. Joe owns a small service business. And for one or more of the reasons we've talked about, Joe decides he's had it. He wants out. And Joe knows his business is valuable because he's always made a really good living. So what's he do? He looks around, he checks the trade journals, and he discovers 2 really scary things. First of all, he can't believe how low the price is that businesses just like his are selling for. And secondly, when he calls to check on some of the ads in the magazines, he finds out that even at these low asking prices, these business people are not selling their businesses. And as he talks to them, he finds a feeling of hopelessness in their voices. Joe now has a really terrible choice. He can either keep working because he has to, because he knows now that his business isn't worth much, or he can liquidate it and maybe just have enough to pay off the debt. And what's he left with after a lifetime of hard work? His personal savings, the equity in his house, Social Security, and a really, really bad taste in his mouth. You see, Joe is trapped. He has no options. He has to keep working. And in my opinion, that's one of the saddest phrases in the English language. I have to keep working. What's wrong with work? Nothing. I love to work. Only, though, if it's your choice. In fact, what is a good definition of success in life? Success in life is having options, having the freedom to do what you want. And in this course, you're going to learn a valuable sequence of steps. I call them the business sale preparation process that's going to help you prepare your small business for its eventual sale. And if you decide not to cash out, well, that's great, because the double win in this program for you is that everything you do in the business sale preparation process also makes your business a better business. You make more money, and you have more fun going to work every day. In fact, many times my clients that go through this process decide not to sell their business right away because they're having too much fun. Let me qualify a few things about this program. First of all, I'm not an attorney, nor an accountant, nor a business appraiser. So your question is, well, how come I get to do this program? Well, it's simple. I've been there, and I've done that. Over the last 25 years, I've started and nurtured 5 small service businesses, and I've successfully sold all of them. And since then, I've helped hundreds of small business owners do the same for their operations. Now, what's this mean for you? It means that every idea and every procedure in this course works. It's been tested and proven in the real world. But I'm not an attorney, nor an accountant, nor an appraiser, and you should not sell your business without the services of all 3 of these individuals. In fact, I want you to understand that this program is not about how to sell your business. It's about how to prepare your business for its eventual sale. And as I mentioned a few minutes ago, these procedures should be followed whether you plan to sell your business in 1 year or 20. So let's get started. My friend Bob Daniels, affectionately known as Sooty Bob in the chimney sweeping world, once told me, "If you want to sell your small service business, I have good news and bad news for you." The good news is that there are people today right now who want to buy small service businesses. The bad news is these people aren't stupid. Well, what's that mean? Bob was laying out that there is a huge pool of people today, mostly due to corporate downsizing, that have the money, they have the business skills, and they have the desire to own and run your small service business. But these people are savvy. They're smart in business. They want to buy a real business, not just a job. After all, most of these people can get another job and without paying a cent to you. But instead, they want to cut the time. They don't have the time to spend years and years building a real business. They'd rather pay you for that chance. They want a machine that runs perfectly with or without their presence, and even more importantly, a business that's going to continue running perfectly without you. Now, it's true you might be fortunate enough to stumble on some trust fund baby that's going to cash you out just because he likes you, but don't count on it. Your job, starting today, is to build a perfectly tuned operation that's going to make anybody want to own it. That's what I'm going to give you in this program, a step-by-step guide to preparing your business today to sell it tomorrow. Here's the steps we'll cover in this tape. Step 1, analyze your life. Step 2, set your goals. Step 3, perform the beauty makeover. And step 4, build a turnkey infrastructure. Your first step, and quite possibly the most important concept we'll discuss in this entire program, is to analyze. That's easy, you say. To analyze just means to investigate, to examine. I do that all the time. You probably want me to analyze how to sell my business. No, I don't. I want you to do something a whole lot harder. I want you to analyze your life. You see, you're correct when you state that you know how to analyze things, but you're always thinking about your business and your cash flow and your receivables, and seldom are you thinking about your life and the direction you want it to take. As Stephen Covey says, we're always focused on the thick of thin things. So in this step, you're not going to analyze how to sell your business, but if you should. You see, all too often, business sellers put the selling of their company only in financial terms. You know what I'm talking about. They say, hey, you mean this baby's worth $1 million? I'm out of here. Well, what happens when they leave their company? They experience seller's remorse, and they go through agony and hell because they cashed out only for money, and that's not enough. You see, for most small business owners, whether they choose to admit it or not, their business is the most important part of their life. And yet they'll casually dismantle this baby of theirs just for filthy lucre, just for the money of it. And I say to you, that's not enough. You need better reasons than that. As my friend Dan Bowser says, when you sell your business, you must have a place you're going to, not just a place you're coming from. In other words, what are you going to do without your business? After all, you've been living life in the fast lane. So as a wise man once said, always begin with the end in mind. Before you begin this business sale preparation process, you must decide how to end it and your career with your company at a logical time and in a dignified manner. But this analysis phase isn't a grim process. It should be a joy. We're talking freedom here. Freedom to do whatever you want with the rest of your life. In other words, with the properly structured sale of your business, you will have achieved success. You'll have many, many options. What are you going to do with the rest of your life? Now, you might choose to start or buy another business. And many times this is a really great thing to do because it lets you taper off. If it's a smaller business or if you don't have employees, it might be like a vacation to you. And it sure eases the financial pressure on you. But let me sound a warning here. All too often, business owners that have sold one business successfully, they become arrogant. In fact, many times they'll crash and burn when they try to go into another industry. And of course, as you well know, arrogance in business almost always leads to humiliating failure. As Andrew Grove, the CEO of Intel Corporation, is fond of saying, only the paranoid survive. So do your homework before you plan or invest in a new business venture, and always run a little bit scared. Now, you've got other options to do with your life. You can do volunteer work, go back to school, master a new and interesting hobby. Whatever it is, you need a reason to get out of bed in the morning. But one thing you shouldn't count on. Don't count on working long-term in the business you've just sold. You see, your buyer, they're going to want you to train and consult with them. But sooner or later, your presence is going to be viewed as a threat by the new owner. After all, the buyer bought it, so it would be his, not yours. And much of the time, you're going to find yourself losing interest in your old company anyway. So if a long-term relationship works out, well, that's great. But remember, you're dealing with emotions here, and emotions are always unpredictable, so don't count on staying with your business. Now, what happens if you find out you don't know what you want to do, or you don't want to sell your business? That's great, because either way, you win. Because the business sale preparation process makes your business more profitable, it makes it more fun, and you're going to love coming to work every morning once again. So to sum up our step number one, your lifestyle analysis, let me give you the four questions I encourage my clients to continually ask all during their business career. Number one, am I making a profit? Now notice I didn't say, am I making money? Of course you're making money. You're being paid for your hard work. But so is the busboy down at your local diner. The idea of owning a business is to make a profit, which is the money above and beyond what it would cost you to hire someone to do your job. Question number two, is my family happy with my involvement in this business? You see, if you aren't truly enjoying your kids or your grandchildren, and if you aren't continually building a better relationship with your wife, well, you're paying a terrible price. And the price doesn't have to be something sudden like your wife or your husband leaving you. It can be something terrible happening. Such as when I realized that I'd totally missed out on the first 10 years of my kid's life because of my obsession with business. So always ask yourself, is my family suffering from my involvement in this business? Because if they are, you're going to suffer more eventually. Question number three, am I advancing spiritually and emotionally? Michael Gerber, in his superb book, The E-Myth, makes the deceptively simple statement, your business is not you. Now, it's true, your business is an important part of your life. It's a reflection of you, your values, and your beliefs. And how many times have you wistfully said about your business, it's my baby, I love it. But people who have as their only interest in life their business, they wind up with a very shallow and unsatisfying existence indeed. You see, chances are when you started your business, you were just desperate to survive. And since survival is a pretty good goal, it seemed entirely rational to you to build your life around your business. But guess what? Now, after all these years, you need to stop that. Your company is not you. You need to grow spiritually and emotionally. And finally, your fourth and maybe your most important lifestyle analysis question, am I still having fun? Remember how it was when you started your business? Impossibly long hours, no paychecks, daily crisis, but guess what? You loved it. You were having fun. It was a joy. You couldn't wait for each new day to start. Do you still feel that way? Probably not. You're probably like most other individuals in small business today, bogged down, drowning in daily problems, and your joy in business was lost years ago. Now, this process we're reviewing, it's going to help you get some of it back. But if you still have to honestly answer no to the question, am I still having fun? It's time to get out. So to review this analysis phase, you should start now and never stop asking yourself these four main lifestyle questions. Am I making a profit in my business? Number two, is my family happy with my involvement in this business? Number three, am I growing spiritually, mentally, and emotionally? And finally, am I still having fun? Now, maybe you can't answer yes to all of these questions, but hopefully as you start this business sale preparation process, you'll be able to. And chances are you may postpone the sale of your business, and that's okay. In fact, that may be even good from a financial standpoint, because as long as you keep preparing your business today to sell it tomorrow, from a strictly financial viewpoint, it's a good thing to postpone selling it. Because even with the best small service business, you're going to have more money in your pocket by running it for another 5 or 10 years than you will selling it now. And then, assuming you keep working on this process of preparing it for sale, you're going to have an incredibly profitable and easy-to-sell business down the road. Traditionally, small service businesses are great revenue producers, but they build little equity over time. Now, this process is going to change this greatly, but not completely. A small service business is always worth more with you running it, if you're running it right. So if you can answer yes to these four lifestyle questions, number one, am I making a nice profit? Number two, is my family happy with me running this business? Number three, am I continuing to grow mentally, emotionally, and spiritually? And number four, and most importantly, am I still having fun? Then great, keep on running your business. But remember, sooner or later, everybody leaves, and you will too. So keep preparing your business today so you can sell it tomorrow. Your next step? Set your goals. Now, you should have many different types of goals, and we're going to talk about some of them in this program. But most people think of money first when they think of goals, and that's okay. And especially when it comes to your financial goals, you need to know the value, the approximate value, the baseline value of your business. And this is really hard for most small service business owners because there isn't one of them in 100 that has any idea what their business is approximately worth. So now, let me give you a simple formula for an initial base valuation of your small service business. Now, the number one question I'm asked at seminars for small service business owners is, how much is my business worth? And the simple answer, of course, is, I don't know. Nobody can tell you what your business is worth until the money actually changes hands. In the textbook sense, any business is worth what an informed and rational buyer is willing to pay for it at any given time. Now, the second answer is that when you decide to start up your actual business selling system, when you finally decide, yes, I want to get out, you must engage the services of a business appraiser, a professional who is accredited for business valuation. But right now, you don't want the hassle or the expense of a formal appraisal. And also, by the time you kick in the business selling system, your business will have changed a lot, and hopefully for the better, because you've spent years preparing it for this sale. Right now, you need what I call a quick and dirty formula, something to hang your hat on to let you start setting some financial and time goals. Here's one simple ballpark method that's worked for many small service businesses. Now, let me warn you. Don't run this initial business base valuation formula on your company and then offer it up for sale based on your result. I'm not a professional business appraiser, and neither are you. And very probably when your business is appraised, its value is going to be higher Because number one, there's other factors the appraiser will consider. And number two, you've been preparing it for sale with the process I'm sharing with you now. But on the other hand, you need a place to start. And I'd rather that your valuation now be a little bit low than you have an ugly surprise later on. Now let's consider some background on this idea of pricing your business. What exactly does the buyer want to buy when you sell your company? That's easy. You say, I'm selling my equipment, I'm selling my fixtures, my customer list, my good name, my reputation, and all the goodwill I've built over the years. Well, that's true. That's what you think you're selling. But that wasn't my question. My question was, what does the buyer want to buy? Now we're getting to the nut, the meat of the matter, which is to look at any business transaction through the eyes of your prospective customer to consider their wants, their needs, and their emotions. So exactly what does your buyer want to buy? And in the final analysis, from a valuation standpoint, a buyer wants to purchase future income, the future money your business will make. You see, at least at first, your prospective buyer isn't going to view this business as his baby. He's not going to fall in love with it. He's going to view this transaction as a means to an end. And when you think about it, that's how you started your company, as a means to an end. You just wanted to make money. Well, that's all a buyer wants to do initially. Now, your buyer wants to make the greatest possible return on his investment with the least amount of hassle and to have a reasonable certainty that his new investment will not only give him this return year in and year out, but this investment is going to grow so that eventually he can do what you're doing, sell out for a nice profit. After all, isn't that the American way? Now, here's the challenge. Your business is competing in your buyer's universe with literally thousands of other business and investment opportunities. Not just businesses like yours, but companies in other industries too. And then you're competing against stocks and bonds and mutual funds, investments in real estate and limited partnerships. You're competing against bank certificates of deposit. Now, are you feeling overwhelmed? Don't be. You've been selling to customers all your life. A prospective buyer of your business is no different from any other prospect. All customers, prospective customers, ask the same thing. They say, what's in it for me? Why should I invest my funds? And even more valuable, why should I invest my time and my life in this particular investment? Now, of course, most prospective business buyers are much too sophisticated to blurt out, hey, what's in this deal for me? So instead, they make the nice business-like statement, what is my projected return on investment? Now, of course, investment return is not the only motivation to buy a business. And we're going to talk about some of those other motivations later in this course. But right now, we need something simple. Now, your professional business appraiser is going to include projected future earnings. And that's going to increase the value of your business. But right now, to keep things easy, we're only going to look at where you are now and where you've been in the past. So this simple formula for roughly valuing your small service business has only four parts. Are you ready? Write this down. Owner's adjusted cash flow divided by desired return of investment plus the fair market value of your business assets and the wholesale cost of your inventory equals your business value. Did you get that? Let me restate it again. Owner's adjusted cash flow divided by the desired return on investment by the prospective buyer plus the fair market value of your business assets plus the wholesale cost of your inventory equals your business value. Now, since we don't know the business value, we're going to use the four numbers we do know to find out your rough selling price. Let's define our terms. The most important one here is owner's adjusted cash flow. And remember, this is what your buyer wants to purchase, the future income from your business. Now, here's one simple way to do it. Write down your year-end before-tax net profit. Now, why do I say before taxes? Because tax strategies differ from each owner, and we're going to see that running a business for tax avoidance is completely different from running it for a profit. And in this owner's adjusted cash flow exercise, we want to show the largest accurate profit we honestly can. So we're going to take this net before tax profit, and we're going to add some things to it, and then we're going to subtract some other things, and we're going to arrive at a more accurate picture of the excess income, the profit that your business actually produces. Now, why do we need to do this? Because small service business owners traditionally run their companies to show as little net profit as possible. Be honest with me. Aren't there many, many different expenditures in your company that allow you and your family a better lifestyle, tax-free? And they're legal, and you're using them. So that's wonderful. All these tax-free perks are wonderful. They're a great reason to own a small business, and the chances are the new owner of your business is also going to shelter his income from the IRS using these things. But he doesn't want to pay for them. They don't have any place in the valuing of your business. So now I want you to go over your detailed trial balance for the last full year. And that's the report that shows each and every check you wrote. Or if you don't have this, just go back through your check stubs. And I want you to list and add up every expenditure you made that wasn't absolutely necessary for the ongoing health of your business. I call it your extra profits list. In other words, we're going to recast your earnings as if there was no IRS. Isn't that a wonderful thought? Well, there is one, but we're going to play like you do not have the IRS right now. For example, your family's country club dues that business has been paying for years. Will your business suffer if you stop going to the country club? Probably not. So add it to your extra profits list. Is it absolutely necessary for your business for your wife to accompany you to the annual trade show last year? Probably not. So go ahead and add in all of her travel expenses, add in her convention registration, because that truly was, between you and me, probably a recreational trip for her, even though she's listed as the treasurer of your corporation. And incidentally, put both of your expenses down on the extra profits list for that after-convention cruise. Now, it was a great fun tax deduction for you, but we both know the business did not gain by you spending 7 sun-drenched days aboard Carnival Cruise Lines. Now, I'm sure you gained mentally and also around your middle from eating all that good food, but your business didn't gain, and so it should go to the extra profits list. Now, how do we figure owner's adjusted cash flow for a valid expense that can be justified, but just not on such a grand scale? Think about the company car. Now, every general manager is going to expect one to be provided, and that's probably correct. But what about that Mercedes 560 SL you've been tooling around town in? Is that absolutely needed for the profits of your company? No, of course not. The only reason for that Mercedes is because you wanted it, and that's fine. But if we don't adjust this expense, you're going to suffer on your sales price. So add that $900 month payment times 12 to your extra profits list. That would be $10,800. But then deduct $250 per month times 12 for a reasonable car, and that would be $3,000. And you wind up with a net addition to your extra profits list of $7,800. That's your extra profits that you're just choosing to drive around town instead of sticking in your pocket. You get the idea. Our first step in determining owner's adjusted cash flow is to determine the total pool of money your business would have if you weren't funding your tax-free perks. In other words, the profit your business would generate if there was no Internal Revenue Service. Now, finally, I want you to add to your extra profits list all the money you took out of your business last year. Whatever you called it, salary, draw, dividends, if it went into your pocket, put it into the extra profits list. A year all added up is pretty amazing. But let me give you a word of advice here. Don't ever sell out the decision you made about disposing of your business based totally on money. Whatever you decide is up to you, but please don't base it on fear of the unknown or on greed about making more money, because life is too short. Now, as you're staring in awe at how much money and benefits you pulled out of the business last year, I want you to think real hard about something else. It's a pretty impressive pile, isn't it? And it's something to think about when you find yourself saying you can't spare 5% of your salary for a regular personal investment plan. So now you've added in your salary, your draws, your dividends, and all of your extra profits, the tax-free perks you took last year that weren't absolutely necessary to the ongoing profitability of your business. But now it's time to subtract something from the owner's adjusted cash flow. I want you to take away what it would cost to hire someone to do your day-to-day work in the business. Are you the general manager? Well, what's the going rate for a quality general manager in your area, including fringe benefits? Now put it into your worksheet and subtract it from your total owner's adjusted cash flow. Well, see, remember we're doing this exercise to determine the owner's cash flow, the amount of future money he's willing to purchase the rights to. Now, no prospective purchaser wants to buy a job. He can find a job on his own and without paying you for that privilege. Your buyer wants to buy the money that's available to him without working, as if he would have no future daily role in your business. And it's true, most small service businesses, the buyer is going to function, at least initially, as the manager. But your buyer deserves to be paid a manager's salary for fulfilling the job, and he shouldn't have to buy that part of his income. So now you have your owner's adjusted cash flow, which is the total of your net profit plus your owner's perks, less the amount it would cost you to hire someone to do your day-to-day work in the business. Now, some small service business owners discover when they do this exercise, they don't really have any owner's adjusted cash flow. They've been making a good living. But in my definition, a business that isn't making a true profit isn't a real business. It's a job. And certainly the owner of this type of business is self-employed, but the chances are his business has very little value. Now, what should you do if you find that your business is falling into this category? Well, first of all, don't panic. You've been providing for your family for many years, and that's more than a lot of people can say. But if you do not have a continuing cash flow, the buyer is going to say, "What's there here for me to buy?" So now you have two choices. You can either work through the rest of this program and pay particular attention to building your company and adding value, or you can pay particular attention to my part later on about having a regular personal investment program to provide for your retirement. But the worst thing to do is to fool yourself, let the year slip by, and keep saying, "Boy, my business is worth a lot of money." Well, I'm here to tell you right now, if you do not show a substantial owner's adjusted cash flow, the amount of money available to a buyer after you purchase the services of a general manager, someone to replace you, then you really don't have a valuable business. Now, do you have the formula in mind for the owner's adjusted cash flow? It's simple. Tax-free perks and benefits plus the owner's draws, salaries, and dividends minus what it would cost to have someone else perform the task that the owner does on a day-to-day basis. Now for the second factor in our valuation equation, your prospective buyer's desired return on investment. Now remember, your business is competing with thousands of other investment opportunities, and the way the buyer judges where to stick his money is his return on investment, the percentage of money he can expect back for leaving his money in your business. In the buyer's mind, the return on investment desirability is affected by five factors. Number one, risk. Number two, buyer involvement. Number three, liquidity. Number four, the leverage of the money. And number five, his potential for appreciation. The more risk and active involvement of the owner, and the less liquidity, leverage, and potential for capital appreciation, the higher the return on investment any buyer will expect. For example, an average money market fund is going to yield between 3 and 8%, depending on where interest rates are. Now, it's true, you're not going to get any appreciation of your capital in a money market fund, and you get no leverage at all. You only earn interest on the actual money you've deposited. But look at it from an investor's viewpoint. Any risk? None, since all the money's insured. Any owner involvement required? None. Liquidity? Well, you can't beat it. Just write a check and pull your money out of there. Well, what's it mean to you? your projected return on investment of your company, it has to be better. It has to be a whole lot better than the return on a money market fund or a passbook savings account to entice a buyer to invest in your company. In fact, nothing in this system of things is perceived by a potential buyer as riskier and more tying up of their cash than purchasing a small service business. You know, when many mutual funds can consistently average 15 or 20% rate of return over a period of years with no buyer involvement, good liquidity, and a fairly low risk ratio, and with the possibility for substantial capital gains, it's obvious we need to offer a better rate of return to the buyer of our small business. Well, what's normal? Your business appraiser is going to give you a much more accurate and specific picture, but most small service businesses are priced to give a return on investment or a capitalization rate of between 25 and 50%. You see, if you go lower than 25%, these safer investments are just too attractive to pass up. And if you go much higher than 50%, there's no money left for you, the owner. So obviously, the higher the percentage we choose, it's going to give a lower selling price for your business. In other words, if your adjusted owner's cash flow is $50,000 and you divide by 25%, which is your capitalization rate, the amount your buyer will pay for this income stream is $200,000. Or to use another example with these same numbers, if a bank was stupid enough to offer you 25% return on investment and you deposited $200,000, you would earn $50,000 during the first year. Now, if we change the desired return on investment to 50%, your buyer is only going to pay $100,000 for that same $50,000 income stream. What determines whether the high end or the low end of the scale is chosen? Well, it all comes back to the perceived risk of your business in the buyer's mind and the amount of owner involvement they think will be required, along with the potential for growth that your business has. And that gives you all the more reason to follow the next two steps in our process, the beauty makeover and building the turnkey infrastructure. And these two steps are going to make your business sell faster and with less perceived risk to the buyer, so they're not going to demand as great a return on investment. And what's the result? More money for you. Now, most small service businesses fall somewhere between the 25% and the 50% capitalization rate. And if you have a successful business with a consistent track record of increasing your owner's adjusted cash flow, a 33% cap rate is probably a good place to start. So now you have your owner's adjusted cash flow along with a starting capitalization rate. This is going to give us the amount of money a buyer will likely pay for your future income stream. But your buyer is going to pay for a couple other things. They're going to pay you the fair market value of your business assets and the wholesale value of your inventory. Now, that doesn't mean that they'll pay what you paid for your business assets. And they're not going to pay what the depreciated value is on your balance sheets or your tax returns, because these depreciation schedules are artificially based on what the IRS says they're worth. And many times, they're worth a lot more, your business assets. So what you must determine is what you could sell each needed business asset you own in an orderly, planned liquidation. In other words, your fair market value of your assets is what your buyer could expect to receive for them if he buys your company tomorrow and then the next day changes his mind and decides to dispose of your business assets. Now, how do you find this fair market value? Don't depend on your balance sheet. Too many things that still have value in your company aren't even on your balance sheet anymore. Instead, I want you to grab a tape recorder and start on one end of your operation and start talking. And if the item is used in the business, list what it is, approximately when you purchased it, what you paid for it new, and how much you would be willing to pay for it now in its current condition to add to your business. Well, that's its fair market value. Now, don't skimp on this step. Chances are you have a lot more assets than you realize. You've built them up fairly painlessly over time, and the temptation is to say, well, I figure everything's worth $50,000 more or less. Well, see, it's the more or less that's going to kill you here. Your initial business valuation will include 100% of the actual fair market value of your assets. So if you miss something that would sell tomorrow for $100, you just walked away from a $100 bill. You're going to have to itemize everything sooner or later, so why not do it now and receive a more accurate idea of the value of your business? Since no one knows your business and its history better than you, you're probably elected to spend a weekend afternoon walking through your operation. Actually, it's kind of fun. It's nostalgic. It's a walk down memory lane. And if you find something that hasn't been used for years, or even worse, you don't even know what it is, mark it for sale now or throw it away. And I'd suggest you make up several categories in your list, such as vehicles, office equipment, office furniture, tools, equipment, spare parts, and then type up this list because it's going to form part of your sales presentation package. You can have your office staff do the actual typing, but remember, at this stage, it's important to maintain confidentiality about your sale plans. Employees and customers tend to bail out real fast when they hear your business is for sale. When I had my secretary type my asset list, I explained it was for my insurance agent. And yes, he received a copy. And finally, to complete your initial business valuation, pick an approximate average wholesale value of the cost of your inventory. Now, I know this fluctuates, and right now we want an average to plug into your initial business valuation formula. And then your business appraiser is going to have you be a lot more specific. So now you see your business valuation model is complete. Your projected sale amount consists of the fair market value of your assets and the wholesale cost of your inventory, along with the capitalized amount your buyer is willing to pay for your future owner's adjusted cash flow. Now, maybe you're thinking, what about my customer goodwill, my superb reputation, the blue sky I'm always hearing about? Well, that's the beauty of this type of formula. All those intangible things combine to form your owner's adjusted cash flow. So we really are including them, and we're assigning a tangible value when we choose a capitalization rate. Now, let me warn you, this formula, this valuation formula, is conservative. And when you have a formal business appraisal performed, chances are your business may be worth more, probably a lot more. But right now, I'd like you to guess on the low side. Now, let me stress again, like they always say in the car commercial, do not try this at home. This particular formula is only designed to give you a starting point, something to help you know where you are and to start your goal-setting phase of the business sale preparation process. As you proceed, you absolutely must engage the services of a business appraiser who is accredited for business valuation and preferably experienced in the real world of small service business transfers. So far in this phase of setting your goals, we've been focused on determining an approximate base value for your business. But you need more goals than just building a high-value business, so get the big picture financially in this blueprint of your future. Carefully plan how much money you're going to need to retire. And this is going to be affected by if you continue to work or start another business, but set a goal on how much income you'll need to maintain your desired lifestyle and the amount of assets you'll need to achieve that goal. And speaking of assets, let me touch briefly on one of the biggest failings most of us have as small business owners: failing to personally save and invest money according to a regular investment plan. Yes, I know you're plowing all your money back into your business, but you're ignoring two basic investment principles with this approach. The first principle is asset diversification, or put simply, not putting all of your eggs in one basket. No investing professional would ever invest all of your funds in only one mutual fund or one stock, no matter how safe they feel this investment is. And yet that's exactly what we do when our entire net worth is tied up in our business. And you notice I used the phrase there, tied up. And this leads directly to the second investing principle we're ignoring when all of our money is locked up in our business, the principle of liquidity. Even with the business sales preparation process, it's flat hard to sell a small service business. And even the best company will probably take years to sell. And you never know when you're going to need ready cash. it's a lot easier to pick up the phone and redeem some mutual fund shares than to try and desperately sell your business to raise cash. So please, find an investment professional to help you plan and set your personal financial goals. I recommend a certified financial planner. Have your investment advisor set up a regular, routine investing schedule and then stick to it. It's a wonderful feeling of security to have some liquid funds working away for you outside your business. I shudder to think how much further ahead I would be right now financially if I had given my personal investing plans even 5% of the time and effort I put into my small service businesses over the last 25 years. So set your personal financial goals, find an expert to help you achieve them, and stick with it. You've heard the old saying, I've got more time than money. You know that's not true. A better saying would be, time is the new currency of the 90s. You see, time is infinitely more valuable than money. You remember from your old high school economics class that the value of every commodity is set by supply and demand. Well, time is a commodity, and for all of us, it's in great demand, and it's declining daily. You see, time is the only tangible commodity in the world that you can't exchange money for. Even Sam Walton, the founder of Walmart, with a net worth of over $20 billion, couldn't buy more time. Just like most folks, he died in his early 70s. Now, how many of his billions do you think Mr. Walton would have traded for another year of life? Don't ever forget, your time is worth more than any amount of money. You see, every day that you stay working in your business, you're trading time for money. Every year you spend consumed by your business is 1 year less for you to enjoy the things that you hopefully defined in step one, your analysis of your lifestyle. Now, like most things in life, how we spend our remaining time in this system of things is a trade-off. The choice is yours. But please, be sure you make a conscious, rational decision. Don't hit 60 or 70 years of age and come down with what I call a bad case of the coulda, shoulda, wouldas. You know what I mean. I could have done this. I should have done this. Ah, if I'd only known, I would have lived my life differently. You see, what a sad way to finish up a life with a case of the couldas, the shouldas, and the wouldas. How do you avoid this? By setting your time goals as far as preparing your business for sale. Let's say that in your analysis phase, you determined you just want out, and out as soon as possible. Well, what's a realistic time to prepare your business for sale and then actually sell it? Well, for most small businesses, a time frame of 3 to 5 years is a reasonable time. Whoa, you say, that's a long time. Well, you're right, absolutely. But this is the biggest single mistake I find most small service business owners making. They're waiting too long to initiate the business sale preparation process. See, all of us put things off. We get overwhelmed with the urgent details of life, the daily decisions of business, and we don't think about having to leave. And what happens is small business owners get burnt out financially or more likely emotionally, and then they get desperate to sell. Well, don't do this, please, because desperation cheapens the transfer of a business and can even make the lifetime that you spend building and creating something of beauty kind of seem worthless. Now, it's true, you can dump your business quick, dirty, and fast, but don't do it because you and your business deserve better. Business owners who put off this business sale preparation process, they not only suffer emotionally, but they also wind up hurting financially. When a seller is desperate to sell a business, not only do they lose tremendous negotiating room, but they also introduce suspicion into the mind of the buyer. So set your time goals on selling your business now. And get started on the business sale preparation process sooner rather than later. Right now, if at all possible. No matter how bad your financial situation right now might seem, chances are that old saying, I've got more time than money, it isn't true for you. Remember, you can always stretch out the final date for leaving your business. But the business sale preparation process needs to be done in any business. It's a win-win situation. And the next step is the beauty makeover. Do you remember how we said that most small business owners, especially if they've founded the company, feel like their business is one of their children? Well, imagine that you have a daughter. You love her. She's your baby. But of course, she's not a baby anymore. She's a senior in high school. And she wants to enter the beauty contest. And you just know she's going to win. Your little baby's going to ace that contest. But wait a minute. What's your little sweetheart look like? Why, you say, she's beautiful. Let me show you some baby pictures. I remember when. No, the beauty contest judges are going to judge your daughter on her appearance now. So now, maybe for the first time in your life, I want you to look, really look at your daughter. Look at her through the eyes of your judges. Uh-huh. Do things look a little different? You see, you still love her, but you're looking through dispassionate eyes. And what do you see? You see a young woman that has a wonderful personality. After all, she is your daughter. But you also see someone who is a little overweight. They have a bad complexion, buck teeth, poor posture, and they're wearing a shabby dress. Now, with this new vision you have of your daughter, what chances does she have of winning this beauty contest? Absolutely none. And if you doubt me, go look at the other girls in the contest. Case closed. Now, my point is obvious here in this illustration. You're in love with your business. You've spent years together. You've nurtured it. You love it. Your company has served you well. But in a very real sense, you're entering your business in a beauty contest. You're competing against thousands of other investment opportunities. And the prize in this beauty contest is a lot more than a worthless trophy. It's all about your life. It's about success or failure. So let's go back to our illustration about your daughter. You have a choice now that you've looked through the eyes of the judges and you've seen her appearance clearly. You can live in denial and say, I don't believe it. Who cares what those stupid old judges think? My baby is beautiful. Now, of course, with this attitude, you're going to be exposing your little girl to one of the most humiliating experiences of her life. Or you can choose to live in the real world. You can admit that in this beauty contest, the judge's perception is your reality, and you can choose to work with the reality and the perception of the judges. What do? You can give your little girl a beauty makeover. You enroll her in a weight loss program. Take her to the dermatologist. You have her fitted for braces. Enroll her in charm school and buy her a new dress. And now the judges will see your little girl the same way you see her, as a raving beauty. Now you need to perform this same beauty makeover on your business if you want the judges, your prospective buyer and his advisors, to choose your company as the winner of their beauty contest. You see, in setting goals, we discussed how to value your business and what a prospective buyer will look at financially. And obviously, what makes a buyer purchase your business is the money they can make from it. Or is that true? You see, the money, the profit in a business will attract a buyer. But nobody has ever bought a small service business based on just the financials. People buy small service businesses because they fall in love. Great financials are important, but all the facts and the figures do is to help your buyer rationalize a decision that he or she has already made emotionally. Strange as it seems, all of us make major buying decisions emotionally. So you need to do a beauty makeover on your business so that your buyers will fall in love. Your company needs to look good, to smell good, and to convey the same emotions that Ford Motor Company does when it's trying to sell you a car. Emotions like comfort, prestige, safety, security. So what do? The first thing is you look at your company through the eyes of an outsider. View your business as if you, the prospective buyer, were seeing it for the first time during a search for a small service business to buy. And remember, your prospective buyer is probably looking at dozens of small companies, so your company needs to really stand out. Now, how do we make your company stand out? We've already learned that buyers purchase businesses emotionally. So let's analyze what emotions you want your company to convey. Don't know? Never thought about it? Well, that's normal. Here's some suggestions for you. How about emotions such as clean, crisp, efficient, businesslike, professional, routine, organized? Now, if you were a business buyer and your emotions included things like nervous, scared, maybe a little bit overwhelmed, don't you think a small service business that was clean, crisp, professional, routine, and organized would reassure you and really stand out? Wouldn't you instinctively respond to such an operation? And you'd tell your advisors, let's check this one out further. Well, see, that's the goal of our beauty makeover, to just stand out from the rest. Now, very likely your business, slowly, imperceptibly over the years, it's gotten a little bit frayed around the edges. And those frayed edges are the first things that a buyer is going to subconsciously notice. So here's some ideas for you on your beauty makeover, how to stand out from the rest of the crowd. First of all, check out your office. And that's true whether it's in your home or if it's in a separate location. Now, all of my small service businesses, and likely yours too, did almost all of our work on the customer's premises. And in most cases, our initial contact with the customer was over the telephone. In fact, I had regular clients that I'd worked for years that had never been to my office. And so the result was that we never paid much attention to the appearance of our office, because our office was designed to get the work out, not to be attractive. But what is probably the first tangible thing in your company your prospective buyer will encounter? That's right, your office. Now, I'm not saying you need to spend $50,000 on new matching office furniture. That would be silly. But the biggest, most effective part of a beauty makeover most of us can do for our office is to organize it. Get rid of the piles of files you have stacked everywhere. Get rid of all the old trade journals you've never looked at and never will. Get rid of the clutter. Quit working off of an old folding table. Give yourself some respect. Go to some auctions. Buy quality file cabinets. Buy some decent office furniture cheap if you need it. Paint the existing furniture you have to match what you bought at the auction. And while you're at it, paint the walls of your office. Have the upholstery clean. Clean the carpets. You get the idea. The nice thing about the beauty makeover for your office is you're going to like working in it more and you'll be more effective. Now move your beauty makeover efforts into your work and storage areas. And this is where you really want to capture the heart, the emotions of your business buyer. And that's because many small service business buyers at heart are what Michael Gerber calls technicians, people who love actually producing work and working with their hands. So let's make your warehouse or your workspace, whatever you want to call it, really shine. Your work area should be so appealing that your prospective buyer will think, I could do this. I can visualize myself coming to work here every day and loving it. So now in the beauty makeover of your work area, really get organized. Throw out the junk, clean it up, and if you have equipment you don't use anymore and it's just sitting around taking up space, sell it off. Clean and paint the walls. And while you're at that auction buying those file cabinets, go ahead and get some good fluorescent lighting and heavy-duty shelving. And since you want to be viewed in this beauty makeover as more like a real business, install a bulletin board and post all the notices the government so thoughtfully provides us. And the side benefit here is you're actually going to be legal. Purchase a few safety reminder notices and post them in your work area. Buy a used time clock if you don't already have one for your employees to use. Start an employee of the month program and keep that plaque posted. Anything you can do to seem like a real business is going to help your beauty makeover. Now let's go really wild with your organizing efforts. I want you to go out and invest a couple $100 in one of those new labeling machines. And these are going to print beautiful, professional, self-adhesive labels in all different sizes of labels and fonts, and then label everything in your shop, label everything in your office, and you're going to look more organized, and you're going to stay more organized. And then find out what OSHA rules apply in your workplace and enforce them. Your plant's going to look more businesslike, and you're going to be in compliance when the OSHA inspector visits you. And it might even seem like inviting the fox into the hen house, But did you know OSHA has an advisory service where they'll send an inspector out not to fine you, but just to advise you on suggested changes? And now that your beauty makeover is complete in your office and plant, even though I'll tell you right now, you're never completely done, let's start on the really important stuff, the things your customer sees. For example, many, many small service businesses fall down on the appearance of their moving billboards, their trucks, and their vehicles. When was the last time you had your trucks lettered? 5 years ago? 10 years ago? Maybe when you opened for business 18 years ago? So look at your truck lettering. And if the lettering on them is the slightest bit faded, if it's flaking, if it's peeling, get it redone. Every day that you drive around with shabby signage, you're losing money, and look at the image you're conveying. And even if your trucks are different colors, at least aim for a common color scheme with the logo that you put on them. Go to the quick sign shops. They can print out custom truck lettering on stick-on vinyl. It's cheaper, it's longer lasting, and it looks every bit as professional as paint. And while we're on the subject of signs and advertising, if your zoning permits, get a professionally designed sign for the outside of your business. Also, don't forget to do a beauty makeover on your employees. I'm not talking about charm school for your macho technicians, even though that's probably a good idea, but what about their uniforms? You see, this part of the beauty makeover is real simple. If your on-site employees aren't wearing uniforms, have them start. And if they do have uniforms, make sure they haven't gotten shabby and frayed and that they're always clean and pressed. And if you're having problems maintaining this sharp image, I strongly recommend a uniform service. For just a few dollars a week, your employees are always going to have clean, sharp, pressed uniforms, and your customers will more than pay back the cost of this service by having more confidence in your company. And then finally, as part of your beauty makeover, look at the tools and the equipment that your employees use on the job. Are these tools maintained and cleaned regularly? Does any of your equipment need to be painted or rebuilt? And here's a tip. You can't go wrong, either in the minds of your customers or your prospective buyers, in promoting the name and the logo of your business. So have your business name, your logo, and your phone number printed up on heavy-duty vinyl bumper stickers and put them everywhere. Put them on the toolboxes, on your equipment, any place where the customer will see it. Now, this step of the beauty makeover is going to pay for itself by you not losing as many tools. And again, it's going to make your company look more like a real business. So see, now you're well on your way in the business sale preparation process. So far, you've analyzed your life, set your goals, and you've completed your beauty makeover. Now, you're going to go to step four, building a turnkey infrastructure. And this is a huge subject, and all I'm going to do now is give you an outline, a vision, of what a small service business needs to sell for the most amount of money. Now, for you to receive the most amount of money, you need to simplify your business so that anyone can run it. Here's the deal. Unless it's an employee or a family member that buys your business, what I call a related sale, it's extremely unlikely you're going to sell your company to someone from within your industry. And there's several reasons for this. First, most owners of small service businesses in your town, they don't have the financial strength to buy your company. And second, it's extremely unlikely you'll sell to someone who's an expert in your trade that's going to relocate, that's going to move to your town to buy your company. Why? Because finding someone in your industry who A, wants to buy your business, B, can afford to buy it, and C, whose family is willing to move across the country, well, that's extremely unlikely. It's the business equivalent of searching for a needle in a haystack. And finally, in trying to sell your company to someone in the same trade, no matter whether they're local or not, you're going to run into what I call the ultimate deal breaker. You see, people in the small service business industry generally have a very low self-image, not only of themselves, but also of the industry they work in and of businesses within that industry. For example, if you own a carpet cleaning business and another carpet cleaner looks at your company, likely his first reaction is going to be, "Why should I pay $500,000 for this operation? I can duplicate it myself for 10% of that because I know this business." Do you see my point? Typically, Individuals that know how to do the work that you do arrogantly assume that they can easily duplicate your business, and they totally miss the extra value that you've built into it, and they certainly don't want to pay for it. So I hope you see that the odds are good that you won't make an unrelated sale to someone from inside your industry. So what's this mean to you? You must make your company a turnkey operation that almost anyone can run. Remember I used the phrase, a needle in the haystack? When you're reduced to searching for someone that wants your business, has the money to buy your business, and also is highly skilled technically in running your business, well, it just doesn't happen. You need to throw your nets wide, and to do this, your company must be based on a turnkey infrastructure. This phrase, turnkey, came from the franchise industry. If you apply to buy a Taco Bell franchise, do you think you have to have 20 years experience cooking Mexican food? Or if you want to open a Midas muffler franchise, do you think you need to have a mechanical background? Of course not. How many Midas muffler franchisees do you think there would be if they were only sold to highly trained muffler mechanics who just happened to have the money and the desire to own a Midas muffler shop? The genius and the success of franchising over the last 20 years depends upon this turnkey concept. Taco Bell or Midas Muffler or any other quality franchise can take an ordinary person with absolutely no knowledge of the industry and make them a success. How? By making everything so easy that they literally can hand the franchise buyer a key, point them toward the systems, and say, go get them. And what's the franchise buyer do? They turn the key. But did you hear what I said? I used the word there, systems. And the fourth step of our business sale preparation process, build a turnkey infrastructure, is totally built around the creating and implementing of systems. Now, why are systems so important? Because they get you, the owner, out of the picture. Remember how we said that as part of the beauty makeover, we need to make your business appeal emotionally to the buyer? Well, what's the number one emotion that any buyer is facing when they look at a business? It's fear. Now, what happens when your buyer sees the multitude of tasks and responsibilities and skills that are all channeling through you? Well, he's scared to death. Well, why is that? Well, first of all, your buyer knows that no matter what you say, after a few months or maybe a year or two, you're going to be out of there. You're going to be gone. You're leaving the business to him. And he knows, quite correctly, he can't fill your shoes. So do you see why the average small service business has so little value in the real world? You see, for most small businesses, what makes them tick is all tied up in the owner. The owner knows everything. The owner runs everything. The owner oversees everything. His hand is everywhere. Now, prospective buyers aren't stupid. They know that immediately after the sale, you've got all this cash in your pocket, and you're going to be feeling free for maybe the first time in your life. You mentally, if not physically, are going to be out of there. And if you're at the center of the business, if everything happens because of you, well, when you leave, that new buyer is going to be left with a ruin of a business. Now, how do you fight this concern of your buyer? You develop a turnkey infrastructure based upon written systems. This way you can very truthfully say, thanks a lot, Mr. Buyer, for purchasing my business. Now, here are the keys, here are the manuals, here are the systems, and here are my people. And these are my employees that are now your employees, and they've been trained by a system how to work these systems. And hey, write me sometime general delivery in Acapulco. I'd love to hear from you. Now, I'm oversimplifying a little here, but not by much. Do you see the value this type of business would have to a prospective buyer, one that runs beautifully with you or without you? Or, for that matter, a business that will run beautifully without that new buyer. So what you need is a company infrastructure, a framework for your business that's going to operate despite the very best efforts of a new business purchaser to screw it up. And infrastructures consist of groups of interlocking systems. So in this fourth step, building an infrastructure, I want you to visualize what would happen if you were hit by a truck on the way to work tomorrow. Which parts of your business would stop immediately? Which parts might last a week? And which parts would hum along indefinitely? Now you have a priority list on which systems to construct first. In a very real sense, I want you in this step to work yourself out of a job. You're going to pretend like you're training someone to do a certain segment of your job without you being there to train them. So first of all, you simplify what you do as much as possible, and then you write it down clearly, step by step. And do this for each segment of each job that you perform. For example, if you're the poor guy who has to call all the late-paying customers, start a system called collection calls. Include what paperwork you need, the frequency that you do this job on, how you choose whom to call, the script that you use, what your next step is if they don't pay, and your next step, and your next step. Now, does this sound like a lot of work? You bet it is. But just think how liberating it's going to be for you to know that you don't have to do this particular job anymore if you don't want to, because you have a system now to replace yourself, to clone yourself. But it's not just you that needs to be cloned. You need to have the capacity to replace every one of your people. Now, as you continue to build your infrastructure, you're going to look at every single task in your company, not as, who's skilled enough here that we can assign this job to, but rather, you're going to say, when you look at a certain job, how can we both simplify it and document it so anybody can do it? Now, if you do this for your entire company, maybe for the first time, you're going to have something really of value to sell in your business. And incidentally, let me tell you something here. I keep saying that you need to do this or you need to do that. That's not true at all. In this fourth step, building a turnkey infrastructure, you must involve your employees. Now, of course, you should not tell them probably at this point that you're thinking about selling your business. Instead, you're going to explain that you're restructuring and you're improving the company. The beautiful thing about this explanation is it's true. And infrastructure building is a grand game that quality employees love to play. Now, once you have every single task, every single job in your operation simply and clearly documented, it's time to link them up. If you're opening a manufacturing plant, you're going to flowchart the path that your product takes through your facility. You're going to analyze every step it makes and every procedure that happens. You're even going to have a quality check station to make sure that every single item you produce is perfect. Well, see, you need to do the same thing with your small service business. Focus especially on how your infrastructure ties these different systems that you've produced together. For example, we just talked about producing a collection call system. But it's not enough to produce a system that stands alone. For example, where are you going to get the information for this collection call systems from? What are you going to do with the information you produce? What's the next step? Always, 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 when you're building an infrastructure, be asking yourself, what's the next step? You see, all too often in small service businesses, there is no next step. And as the old saying goes, if it's nobody's job, nobody will do it. Now, no smart business buyer wants to purchase a company like that, and you certainly don't want to sell to a dummy. Now, let me make a final important point here. In a small service business, just what is the product you hope to produce? No, it's not the finished work that you happen to do. That just helps you get to your final, ultimate desired product, which is a happy, delighted cheerleader customer. A cheerleader customer is someone who is so ecstatic, so pleased, so surprised that they're going to sing your praises from the rooftops. They're going to tell their neighbors about what a great company you are. They'll talk about you at work. They're going to talk about you at church. A cheerleader is an unpaid salesperson for your business. Now, do you have cheerleaders now? Of course you do. But how many? 10%? 5% of your total customers? Maybe 1%? Think of the power. Think of the value in your business if you could consistently double the number of cheerleaders you have out there selling for you. What if you could triple them? Now, you see, that's value in a business. Do you want to add more value? Think about how most businesses make cheerleaders now. If their employees do a good job, and if the customer's in a good mood, and if nobody offends the client, and if it's a full moon on a month with 31 days in it, you get the idea. Most customer cheerleaders are made by accident. And you see, cheerleaders by accident isn't much of a goal for your infrastructure. The most important part of your infrastructure is charting the path, making a flow chart of how your customer moves through your company. I call it the service circle, and it's built around the concept of managing the experience of your customer as they pass through your company. I've named these concepts service engineering, and this philosophy can totally transform your business. So listen very carefully to me here. In the final analysis, all your buyer wants to purchase from you is your cheerleader customers and the systems that you have in place to keep those customers and make more cheerleaders. So now you know where to focus your energies as you build this turnkey infrastructure. Always, always focus on the experience of your customer and how you can build systems to consistently exceed the expectations of those clients. But you see, a company in chaos can't focus on the customer. It's too busy lurching from one crisis to the next. So in step four, building a turnkey infrastructure, you're going to create a business anybody can run easily and immediately because anybody might have the money that's going to let you cash out. So there you have it. Now you have the four steps in the business sales preparation process, and I hope you have a new vision along with them. And I sincerely hope, from the bottom of my heart, that these four steps, your lifestyle analysis, setting your goals, the beauty makeover, and building a turnkey infrastructure will allow you to prepare your business today so you can sell it tomorrow.
We hope this edition of the Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month has given you many new ideas to help you run your company more effectively. Along with this month's tape, you also receive several other things. There is a short summary of the tape you just heard, a brief outline of the program for quick review, and you will also find a customer response card enclosed. There is a place on the card for your comments on this tape, as well as space for suggestions you would like to make for topics on future tapes. The response card is postage paid, so please write down a few comments and drop it in the mail. We would love to hear from you. The Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line, 1-800-432-7963. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.